This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. One of Rudy Giuliani's so-called fixers is saying that they're prepared to cooperate with the Trump impeachment inquiry. We get more from AP correspondent Tim McGuire.
A Soviet-born associate of Rudy Giuliani reverses course and is now prepared to cooperate in the impeachment inquiry. Lev Parnas' attorney, in a letter to the impeachment investigators, writes he will honor a subpoena to appear. Joseph Bondi also cautions the committees that they must make sure they do not infringe on his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. Parnas and Igor Fruman are said to have aided Giuliani's efforts to oust U.S. Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch and to get Ukrainian officials to investigate Joe Biden's son, Hunter. The two were arrested at an airport with one-way tickets out of the country. Next to be released by the committees, the interview transcripts of former special envoy for Ukraine, Kurt Volker, and U.S. Ambassador to the European Union, Gordon Sondland. Tim McGuire, Washington.
40 years after the takeover of the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, Iran marked that anniversary by announcing that it is speeding up uranium processing by using new, faster centrifuges. A U.S. official who called the announcement nuclear blackmail said it's an attempt by Tehran to get the worried European signatories of the nuclear deal, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Agreement, to make concessions to Iran. Britain's intelligence agency, the MI5, downgraded the country's terrorist threat level from severe to substantial Monday. The level was first raised from substantial to severe in August of 2014 due to the rise of the Islamic State group in Syria and Iraq. While most of UK's terror level has decreased, Northern Ireland has remained at a severe risk since 2010. This is VOA News. At least five people were killed Monday when Iraqi security forces used live ammunition against continued protests in Baghdad. Security forces fired at demonstrators who came within 500 meters of the prime minister's office Monday. Reuters' Emily Spickle.
Despite hundreds killed in the crackdown, protesters are digging in, defying the prime minister who appealed for them to go home and camping out overnight in the capital, Baghdad. Abdul Mahdi says the protests have achieved their aim and are now costing the country's economy billions of dollars. The premier has said he is willing to resign if lawmakers agree on a replacement. He's also promised a number of reforms. The protesters say that it's not enough and that the entire political class needs to go.
That is Reuters' Emily Spickle reporting. Sweeping bans have been put in place in India to address dense, noxious smog. VOA's Zlata Sahok has details.
Flights have been delayed or canceled at Delhi's Indira Gandhi International Airport, and authorities have also shut area schools and ordered all construction work to stop in an effort to slash pollution.
Here at the airport, we are facing difficulty breathing. There's a burning sensation as if someone had put chili pepper in my eyes.
Health officials warn that everyone is at risk of serious health effects. People venturing into the streets donned breathing masks, as residents of Chinese capital Beijing used to have to do. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
Afghanistan and Pakistan have traded charges of harassment of their diplomats serving each other's capitals, prompting Islamabad to halt its consular operations in Kabul until further notice. The latest diplomatic dispute between the neighbors erupted on Sunday when Pakistan complained that its diplomatic staff, while going to work this week, had been obstructed on the road, and the embassy vehicles were also hit by motorcycles in the Afghan capital. Pakistan's foreign ministry said it summoned the Afghan charge affairs to convey Islamabad's concerns over the safety and security of Pakistani diplomats, demanding that Kabul immediately probe the security violations and harassment incidents. The Afghan foreign ministry, while responding to Pakistan's complaints Monday, vowed it would seriously investigate them. At the same time, however, it alleged the Afghan ambassador in Islamabad was mistreated by the Pakistani spy agency. More at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Morning Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan's president meets today with rebel leader Riek Machar in Kampala, Uganda.
The meeting aims at discussing the status of implementation of the agreement and particularly the outstanding issues as we're reaching the end of the extended pre-transitional period.
Paul Bof-Baluwang is the SPLM-IO Director for Information. The UN Security Council calls for stability in Guinea-Bissau ahead of the November 24 election. One person was killed Monday in Guinea-Conakry during a funeral march for those killed during October 14 protest. And Ugandan police used force on Monday to stop an opposition press conference.
We were met with brutal force, with tear gas and live bullets. And as I speak now, a number of our supporters are injured, some of them badly injured.
Patrick Oboy Amurayat is the leader of Uganda's main opposition, FDC. Kenya releases the results of this year's census. Another Zimbabwe cabinet minister is arrested for alleged corruption. And about 150 foreign-owned shops are shut down in Kumasi, Ghana. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South Sudan President Salva Kiir and his former Vice President, Dr. Riek Machar, will meet today in Kampala, Uganda, in the presence of regional leaders. This will be the third face-to-face meeting between the two men. Paul Bof-Baluwang, SPLM-IO Director for Information and Public Relations, says the meeting will focus on resolving outstanding issues to pave the way for the formation of a transitional government scheduled for November 12.
Dr. Riek Machar has received officially an invitation to attend a third face-to-face meeting with the President Salva Kiir in Kampala, Uganda, in presence of the grantors of the RRC on Tuesday. The meeting aims at discussing the status of implementation of the agreement and particularly the outstanding issues that are stopping now the implementation of the agreement as we're reaching the end of the extended pre-transitional period.
What are the SPLM's expectations of Tuesday's meeting?
We hopefully expected that President Salva Kiir listened to the voice of the region and the suffering of the people of South Sudan and accepted to implement the outstanding issues after resolving them, and namely the security arrangements and the boundaries and the number of the states. And we think that it's deemed necessary to give room for the implementation of the agreement by extending the pre-transition period for a term that the both leaders and all parties agreed upon.
Does that mean that the rescheduled time for the formation of the transitional government, scheduled for November 12, will not happen as stipulated?
You know, there's no shortcut for peace. And to us, we are calling for resolving the outstanding issues, which are articles agreed upon by all parties. We are not calling for something different or out the agreement itself. So to us, the priority should be in the implementation of the agreement itself. It's not the formation of the government. Well, we believe that if there's a proper security arrangement in place, that will pave way for the other chapters of the agreement, the seven chapters that will be implemented in letter and spirit. This agreement is the less costly way to attain peace and stability in South Sudan.
What is your response to South Sudanese who say they are sick and tired and disappointed in both groups for not coming out and resolving your issues to form a transitional government, restore normalcy so they will go back to their regular day lives?
You know, linking the formation of the government with peace in general is mischief by the government itself. We are calling for the South Sudanese people so that they can have patience on us, because now we are fighting for them. And we want to bring good peace in South Sudan. It's not just like the one that was in 2015, wild, where we're pressured by the region, countries and the international community to go to Juba and form the government, while afterwards the war breaking and we return to square one. So we have learned now, maybe through the hard way, and we are determined not to repeat the same incident again.
Pau Bof Baluang is the SPLMIO Director for Information Public Relations. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. Executive members of Uganda's main opposition forum for democratic change, the FDC, say they plan to meet soon to consider declaring a series of nationwide demonstrations against what they say is the Ugandan government's use of state institutions to suppress opposition activities. This comes after police on Monday stopped a planned FDC press conference and arrested about 50 members of the opposition party, including former FDC presidential candidate Dr. Chisa Besigye. Supporters of the ruling party say opposition partisans disrupted business activities by marching through a major business district. Patrick Oboy Amurayat is president of the FDC.
We were met with brutal force, with tear gas and live bullets. And as I speak now, a number of our supporters are injured, some of them badly injured. It's necessary at this point for me to say that our leader, Dr. Kizza Besigye, was arrested very violently, his vehicle broken into, his property taken away, and he, together with his driver, are now in confinement. In different police stations around Kampala, we have a total of up to 50 members of the FDC, of my party, now being held. We are unable to access them as I speak now. We are trying to find a way of getting food to them because they have not had anything to eat since morning.
Supporters of the police are saying that the agreement you had to notify them of your meeting does not include your supporters marching in the busy street to head to the Kampala city center, and that you flouted the law and they are there just to ensure the right thing is done so that no laws are broken. So why are you faulting them for taking action demands?
Walking was an ordinary march. It was not a procession. It was people walking because we had, in the first place, been denied the opportunity to assemble in a venue that we had prepared. And so, really, rather than play the blame game on us, I think the police needs to take responsibility. Had it not been for them stopping our march brutally, there could not have been mayhem.
But Patrick, the police on several occasions have said the FDC and other opposition groups usually organize protests or demonstrations in the busy business district, knowing that it will disrupt business activities in Kampala and beyond.
This particular meeting was organized at the outskirts of the central business district of Kampala. And this was in response to concerns about interference of such activities in the central business district. But be it as it may, if the police intention was to guide us away from the central business district, then they could have directed us which routes to use. And I would like to make it categorically clear that going forward from now, we are going to be holding a top executive meeting to decide on the next course of action. I cannot rule out the possibility of us calling for nationwide demonstrations and protests to show to the junta the anguish that the people have gone through in their hands, and for a call for us to ask for sanitization of the politics of this country.
Patrick Oboy Amurayat is the leader of Uganda's main opposition forum for democratic change, FDC. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Kampala. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butt in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 5th. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. The opposition in Guinea-Conakry say police killed a teenager on Monday during a funeral march for those allegedly killed by police during the October 14 protest against a suspected plan by President Alpha Condé for a third term. The president has neither confirmed nor denied his intention to seek a third term. Sidya Touré is the leader of the Opposition Union of Republican Forces Party and a member of the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution, an alliance of opposition groups behind the protests.
You know, 14 people was killed during this demonstration of 14th of October. 11 of them were supposed to be buried. So we start from the hospital to go to the cemetery. And on the road, we have to pray in the mosque. And during the period, nothing happened. So, you know, close to the mosque, I think there was many people there. And we saw that policeman was there. And we start to shoot with tear gases. And after we shoot people, we have 2 killed and 6 wounded.
Did the protesters provoke the police?
What was not protesters, what was people coming from hospital and going to cemetery. That was not a protesting. In Africa, when we lost somebody, we go to the mosque to pray on them, and after we go to cemetery, this was our plan, nothing else.
What do you make of the allegations from the president, Alpha Conde, that you, the opposition, are trying to overthrow his government?
That's his crazy thing. You know, this guy was here 9 years. What he's doing in the country, he wants to overthrow his own government because he's just knowing nothing. No road, no school, no hospital, no electricity, no water supply.
You said that 11 people were killed, but the government is giving a figure less than 11. 8, I would say.
14 people was killed. 11 in Conakry, 2 in Mamou, that's about 400 kilometers from there, and 1 in Marila, is a small town. We just want to bury people who was killed in Conakry. We didn't succeed very well in this thing, but we killed 2 people.
What happens now? I know you have said you will continue to protest until the president says that he's
you know,
not going to
guy,
seek another term.
This guy wants to impose his position about his third mandate to the whole country. If people don't accept, I think he has a position now to shoot, to use army, to use everything, you know, to succeed. So what do you want us to do? We are going to protest every time because we are against the modification of the constitution. So we continue to protest, absolutely.
Sidi Ature is the leader of the opposition Union of Republican Forces Party in Guinea. You're speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. The UN Security Council on Monday joined regional voices calling for restraint and dialogue to end the latest political crisis in Guinea-Bissau. VOA United Nations correspondent Margaret Bashir has more.
Guinea-Bissau President José Mário Vaz triggered the latest escalation in an ongoing power struggle with the ruling PAIGC party, of which he was once a member. Last Tuesday, he dismissed Prime Minister Aristide Gomes and named a replacement from a minority political party. But Gomes has refused to step down, escalating tensions ahead of an already delayed presidential election scheduled for November 24th. The 15-nation West African regional bloc, ECOWAS, called Gomes's firing illegal. While the UN Security Council did not go as far as ECOWAS, it did issue a consensus statement Monday in which it refers to Gomes as prime minister and in charge of conducting the electoral process. In its statement, read by Council President Ambassador Karen Pierce of Britain, the UN's most powerful organ said there is an urgent need to hold the elections on time for a peaceful transition of power.
The Security Council also reminds all actors that the Council's possible reconsideration of the existing sanctions regime will depend on their orderly conduct as well as that of other political actors. It also reminds all stakeholders that it will consider taking appropriate measures against those who undermine stability in Guinea-Bissau.
South African envoy Jerry Machila expressed hope stability would prevail.
We hope that the army will remain in the barracks, that the protesters will tone down a bit, and then we have free, fair elections around the country.
At least one person was killed and several injured Saturday in a pre-election protest. Guinea-Bissau has a history of instability and coups since becoming independent in 1974, although President Vache, elected in 2014, has been able to complete his 5-year term. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Kenya's population has increased by 9 million in the last 10 years. There are now 47.5 million people in the country, compared to 38.6 million in 2009. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, authorities Monday released results of the 2019 Kenya population and housing census.
Speaking during the release of the census data in State House, Nairobi, President Uhuru Kenyatta said that, by the help of the government, the Kenya National Bureau of Statistics conducted a successful exercise.
It's another milestone for our country in that we are the first in Africa to release census results 2 months after the exercise was completed. I recognize and also fully appreciate patriotic sacrifice by the young men and women, together with our village elders, who worked as census officials. This year's census was the first of its kind in Kenya, in that for the first time ever in our history, we fully embraced the use of technology in the census process.
The statistics shows that there are more women at 24 million than men, who stand at 23.6 million. Mr. Kenyatta called on arms of government to use the data released in the planning processes.
These results released today now provide us with a unique opportunity to realign our development strategies, our policies and programs. And so therefore today we do direct that all ministries, departments and government agencies to utilize these results. And I also urge other arms of government, counties, stakeholders, and also our development partners to make use of these results in their planning processes.
Kenya's capital, Nairobi, tops the most populated regions in the country, standing at 4.4 million people, as Lamu tops the least populated counties with a population of 143,920 people. Director, Kenya National Bureau of Statistics, Zachary Mwangi, says this is the first census to use mobile technology as per the United Nations requirement.
The census was the eighth to be conducted in Kenya and the first paperless census where mobile technology was used during the mapping and enumeration. And this was in adherence to the United Nations recommendation for the 2020 round of censuses on adoption of use of technology.
The census results will help in realigning the developmental strategies in the country. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Another member of Zimbabwe's cabinet is facing charges of abuse of office, bringing to two the number of high-ranking officials in President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government arrested by the Zimbabwe Anti-Corruption Commission, or ZAC. Minister of State for Presidential Affairs, Joram Gombo, is scheduled to appear in a Harare court today, Tuesday, to face a variety of charges for abuse of office during his tenure as Minister of Transport. In July, the commission arrested then-Tourism Minister Preska Mafumira over allegations of corruption. ZAC chairperson Matanda Moyo tells Janga Kandimiri of VOA Zimbabwe Service that more ministers are likely to be arrested soon.
It's correct that ZAC has taken in the former Minister of Transport, and currently he's being questioned by ZAC with a view of taking him for a remand before the court. He's being accused of abuse of power during his tenure as Minister of Transport.
As Minister, I think many things went through his hands. What in particular?
I cannot state all the offences as I don't have the docket before me, but I know that he is accused of having leased his property for Zim Airways and paid $1 million for its renovation, plus payment of rentals. He did not declare that he was conflicted in that matter. He is also accused of being involved in the CMED fuel deal, involved where $2.7 million was paid to a certain company and no fuel was delivered. He is also accused of having directed the reinstatement of persons facing corruption charges when they had not been cleared by the court and others.
So where is he detained at the moment?
He's not detained. He's being questioned here at ZAC at the moment.
Are you going to hand him over to the police?
We don't hand him over to the police. ZAC has got arresting powers.
Many people think that ZAC does not have teeth to deal with corruption in Zimbabwe.
ZAC only investigates matters. So people have got this wrong impression that it is ZAC which then prosecutes the matters. ZAC's duty ends with investigations. And I do agree that sometimes we then lose control of the matters along the way. But for us, we are doing our part as ZAC in investigating the matters and taking the matters to court.
Lois Matanda Moyo is the chairperson of the Zimbabwe Anti-Corruption Commission. She spoke with Janga Kandimiri of VOA Zimbabwe Service.
The Ghana Union of Traders Association, known as GUTA, has forcibly closed down 150 shops in Kumasi that belong to foreigners, mostly Nigerian nationals. Mavis Ochery has more from Washington.
Ghanaian traders say they have shut down scores of shops owned by foreigners because they were breaking national laws. The traders also say law enforcement agencies failed to address the problem. Albert Mensah Ofeh is a public relations officer for the Ghana Union of Traders Association. He calls on government to enforce laws requiring any foreigner who wants to do business in Ghana to invest a minimum of $1 million and employ at least 25 Ghanaians. The law bars most foreigners from operating retail businesses. He says foreigners who want to do business in Ghana must have proper permits to live and work in the country and register their businesses. Ofeh says the Ghana Standard Authority has found that many of the spare parts, equipment and medicine foreign-owned shops import are substandard. He says foreign companies also don't pay fair taxes.
Imagine when we got one Nigerian guy who opened a shop selling mobile phone accessories. He ordered 10 containers a month and he had a shop in Kumasi here, gathering many, about 500 Nigerians, giving them the materials to sell and then they made sales for him. When we went there with GRA and all the institutions, we find out he sells daily is about 40,000 Ghana cedis, which is no problem, it's business. But for VAT, VAT, he pay 18 cedis a month and he's a foreigner. So what do you think? And the government put all the huge
with a VAT rate of 2.5%, that shop would be expected to pay about 5,000 Ghana cedi a day in tax. Some critics of the Traders Association say they shut down Nigerian-owned businesses in retaliation for the Nigerian government decision to close much of its border to trade. Ofeh rejects that allegation. He says, however, the border closure infringes on trade agreements between Nigeria and other states, especially Ghana, which exports large amounts of goods to Nigeria through neighboring Benin. He also accused the Nigerian government of opening the border just for Aliko Dangote, the head of Nigerian conglomerate Dangote.
The Nigerians closed their border. They closed it without prior notice to Ghana. When they closed the border, many Ghanaians also in the border town. They are coming with their goods from Nigeria. And the funny thing is, they opened the border for one businessman called Dangote, and they opened the border for him with trucks, with cement, coming to Ghana.
Chief Kizito Obi is chairman of the Ashanti Regional Nigerian Union of Traders Association in Ghana. He rejects accusations that Nigerian businesses closed while violating Ghanaian law. He says many of the Nigerian businesses in Kumasi were properly registered and were paying taxes. He described the closure of their shops by Ghana Traders Group as an act of hatred and retaliation for the border closure. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Ochoa in Washington.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. South Sudan President Salva Kiir and his former Vice President Dr. Riek Machar will meet today in Kampala, Uganda, in the presence of regional leaders. This will be the third face-to-face meeting between the two men. Paul Bov Baluan, SPLMIO Director for Information and Public Relations, says the meeting will focus on resolving outstanding issues to pave the way for the formation of a transitional government scheduled for November 12th. And that is it for this Tuesday, November 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Bott in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day. I'm a sucker
for Hi, I'm Larry London. Don't miss your chance to get the Now 71 CD, including some of the top hit songs of today's biggest stars. I can't write one song that's not about you. Can't drink with that. The CD features Billie Eilish as Bad Guy. So you're a tough guy, like you're really rough guy. Just can't get enough guy, just always so puff guy. I'm that bad type, make your mama sad type. Make your girlfriend mad type. Lil Nas X, Old Town Road. Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse to the Old Town Road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. I'm gonna take my horse to the Old Town Road. I'm gonna greatest hits. You can only get the chance to win by listening to Border Crossings. Tune us in every day at 1500 UTC.